The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is proudly presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook by using promo code RTRS. And brought to you by Body Bio. Use code FIRECJ, FIRECJ for 20% off any Body Bio order at bodybio.com. Also brought to you by Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Get yours at bigbarker.com/Ricky. And we are also brought to you by Stateside Urban Craft Vodka, the official sponsor of the Corner 3 newsletter with Zoe, statesidevodka.com. On the show today, the Sixers have a brand new coach against all odds. They do not hire Mike D'Antoni, but they do hire Nick Nurse. Mike D'Antoni is hiding in a closet in the practice facility in Camden. Nick Nurse, by most accounts, the best available veteran coach. Also, by most accounts, a total lunatic. We will do a deep dive on one Nick Nurse with Blake Murphy, who covers the Raptors for Sportsnet up there in Canada. Stateside, Urban Craft Vodka, I mentioned, perhaps over the long Memorial Day weekend, a beautiful weather here in the Northeast. You're enjoying some Surfside iced tea and vodkas, maybe some Surfside vodka sodas. If not, it's going to be warm this weekend too. My dog also won't shut the fuck up. Jesus Christ. It's every fucking night. Anyway, if you want these things, if you want the Surfside iced tea and vodka, the peach tea and vodka, the iced tea lemonade and vodka, the lemonade and vodka, or the vodka sodas or anything else from Stateside, go to statesidevodka.com. You got to be 21 to drink it. Without any further ado, Amos and the chef.
Larry, sweetie, the man is here.
Say the name. I say the name. I say the name.
We will write y'all.
Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who simply does not care that the Sixers hired a new coach. That is one Mike Levin.
Now, I wish they waited. I wish they waited until
you cared.
August, September, save some money, decided, like, you know how teams don't have to, like, if they don't hit the salary floor,
they have
then
time
they can spread the team, the money out to the rest of the team. I wish that they did that with the coach. There's just no coach this year. They just spread the money out to, like, the concession people. We're just going to hate the coach anyway. May as well not even hire one. What's the point?
We didn't hate Brett.
But no, we didn't hate Brett. But we hired Brett at a very warm-feeling time in us. If they hired Brett now, fresh, I'm sure we would have found a way.
Yeah. We'll have Blake Murphy, who covers the Raptors, on too. I want to ask Blake just about we've gotten force-feeded all of, like, the six headlines about Nick Nurse over the last 48 hours or so. So I want to ask him about the reality of those headlines. But here's what Adrian Wojnarowski said. And when I say headlines, I mean, he does this, he does this, he's like this. Adrian Wojnarowski says the Philadelphia 76ers are hiring Nick Nurse as coach, tasking him with helping to deliver the franchise its first title in 40 years, sources told ESPN on Monday. The Sixers and Phoenix Suns were engaged with Nurse and his agent, Andy Miller of Clutch Sports, throughout Sunday and Monday, leaving Nurse with a difficult decision between two contending teams, sources said.
Nurse, Andy Miller was Kristaps' agent that didn't want him to work out here, right? Is that correct?
I don't remember that. Possibly.
I believe that is the case, and he was hiding in the bathroom. I think that was in our boy Yaron Weitzman's book. There's too many agents that we have bad memories with, various agents, except for Jimmy Butler's agent, who was like, just keep him. You should probably just keep him.
Jimmy Butler's agent is the only one who backed Brian Colangelo during the entire.
Who the fuck knows? They're all bad. They're all bad guys. I'm sure.
Nurse's desire to coach MVP Joel Embiid and his history with Sixers president of basketball operations Daryl Morey played a significant part in his decision to commit to a deal with Philadelphia. Sources said Nurse separated himself the interview process, selling a vision for the Sixers centered on Embiid. Now, Mike, I ask you this. Before we get to Blake, I thought it was notable that they mentioned centered around Embiid.
Yeah.
Do you think this means, well, what do you think this means for the chances that James Harden returns?
Anything? I don't know. I mean, I think firing Doc is the bigger deal for Harden than who they got to replace him, probably. And I think hiring the right coach for Embiid is a bigger deal to the Sixers than whether or not James comes back. I think it is notable. Now, we don't know the money situation, how much they offered Nurse, how many years compared to what Phoenix was offering or even Milwaukee who had already hired a coach before that. But like, I do think it's notable that despite the fact that we all hate the Sixers, we don't find them interesting or compelling or worth our time at all. And we'll never watch them again. I do think it's interesting that Nick Nurse, who ostensibly, as you said, was the best available coach on the market. I mean, maybe Budenholzer, like they're all guys with playoff success and championship equity, chose the Sixers and chose Embiid out of all of it. So I think that's interesting and notable. And if I wasn't already dead, would make me feel good.
You know, one of the things that people have brought up with Harden is like, well, there's no way he's going to want to play. And let me say this for sure. I hope the hiring of Nick Nurse makes it less possible they resign James Harden in my heart, I hope. But a lot of people have said, well, you know, Nurse is really intense and he plays guys a lot of minutes and he's kind of a lunatic. But let me just remind you of a couple things. First of all, James Harden always plays a lot of minutes. So I don't think he cares about playing a lot of minutes.
Yeah.
The second thing is that, do you know who's also a lunatic? Ime Udoka.
Mm-hmm.
Like Ime Udoka is notably an insane person and a very intense coach and an intense defensive coach as well. So if that were the case now, you know, like do I think that James Harden would have loved to have a coach here who he already knew and knew that he would do whatever he wanted? For sure. But I don't know that James Harden's going to get that anywhere. So I don't know how much it matters. I don't think it helps the Sixers, but I don't think it makes it a non-starter, I think is where I am on it.
Yeah, I think it's sort of independent of it. I think my stance with Harden is if he's coming in saying, I want a bigger role than I had last year and I want a 4-year max, I hang up and I
even if he's right in front of you,
I hang up my phone, I throw my phone at him and I run away. If we're doing it in person, God, yeah, chuck it at him, right in his dome. No, not interested in that. But if there's a situation where, you know, Daryl's been talked about at the end of season press conference where it was like, we'll have to be creative. We have contingency plans that we've been working on, blah, blah, blah. Like, I think one of them is James at a year or two, maybe three, at like a more reasonable price, similar to what he signed $1. Last year. Or there's other options, yeah. Or there's other situations. One of which being potentially like Fred VanVleet. Like, I don't know how that would happen, and they'd have to clear money, and that's complicated. Maybe a sign and trade or something. But
I did see the tweet. We all saw the tweet. We all saw the Fred VanVleet tweet. The thumbs up and muscle.
A muscle. Well, I believe it was prayer hands and a muscle. Oh, so
prayer hands and muscle.
Fake news from Spike there. The other thing, he was also on a, I just saw it as like seconds before this podcast, but he was on a, I think it was on with Shams, where he talked about his relationship with Nick Nurse and that he likes him and he'll be rooting against him unless he's there with him in Philly.
Ooh.
I think that's what he said. Or I read a
fake news,
a fake tweet, and I just podcast. this is the kind of, we're in the off season and we're still in hell. But look, A lot of options on the table. I think getting Coach out of the way and picking ostensibly a good one. I think the biggest thing with Doc was that, like, yes, he was a good regular season coach, but, and yes, as Rich Hoffman put in his Athletic piece about the hiring, he did like somewhat try more stuff this year. Like, he went to zone more often than he had before, but I just don't think that he's that nimble as a coach. And I know he's not that nimble as a coach. I'm not going to couch it with, I don't think he factually is not. And even though all coaches have their stubbornness, at least Nick Nurse's stubbornness lends itself towards, like, I'm willing to go out on any limb to find an edge anywhere. I think he will be a better coach in a playoff series and take them to a potential higher ceiling than they could have had. Now, if the personnel doesn't get there, then there's nothing Nick Nurse can do to, you know, vault them over the top. But I think they have a better chance with it than Nick Nurse. And I reserve the right to take it all back.
He's more stubborn.
I'll take it back in a second.
In his Nick Nurse gear. There must be four different kinds of hats with NN on it. So before we get
lowercase NN.
Lowercase NN. I've been trying to buy the snapback one for months, but you can't find it anywhere. Before we get to Blake Murphy, who can tell us everything we need to know about Nick Nurse. I can't wait to ask 1,000 Nick Nurse questions because I feel like I've wanted Nick Nurse, but I don't even know what the fuck I'm talking about. So I'll ask somebody who does. DraftKings Sportsbook. The Nuggets are, and we'll get to this perhaps later, perhaps after Blake, we'll have to make our finals prediction. Nuggets are -400 favorites at DraftKings Sportsbook. Heat +310. Line on game one is Nuggets -8.5.
And what are the Celtics to win the championship?
This year?
Yeah.
Well, +8,000. You never know.
Pretty good odds.
You never know what could happen.
The league has done worse.
So Miami versus Denver. The official sports betting partner of the NBA is DraftKings Sportsbook. Right now, for the finals, new customers can place a $5 bet during the NBA finals and score $200 in bonus bets instantly, plus bigger payouts with DraftKings stepped up same game parlays. Here's how you take advantage of the stepped up same game parlay. I would like to name this title that it is the no matter who wins, Spike looks like a fucking idiot. That is the headline.
It is a tough championship for you.
It's tough. But I already made my peace with both guys. So open the DraftKings Sportsbook app and place your stepped up same game parlay. As soon as I did that, I was right about Ben Simmons' poem. Miami versus Denver was a lock. Yeah. The stepped up same game parlay by combining three or more bets from any NBA finals game, boost your NBA winnings with each leg you add up to 100%. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and sign up with code RTRS. New customers place a $5 bet and score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code RTRS. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Got to be 21. See show notes for details. Let's talk to Blake. There he is.
What's up, guys?
Blake Murphy. Now, Blake, you're the radio show, the Fan Drive Time. Is what you do. Yeah.
It just changed, actually. So I'm now that Raptors and Leafs are done. By the way, if you guys don't know this, the Toronto Maple Leafs are the Philadelphia 76ers of the NHL. The parallels are insane. I've moved back now doing Jays. I have a Jay show 10 a.m. to 12 every day. Okay. I've got them on in the background, some big beefy reliever for the Brewers coming in now. But yeah, I'm all over the place.
We appreciate your time, man. You can follow Blake at Blake Murphy ODC. So give me this. You hear that Nick Nurse goes to the Sixers. Your first gut instinct is?
It's hilarious. It is the funniest option on the table. The guy that Joel Embiid complained about, the guy who has complained about Joel Embiid at every stop, the Raptors fans think Joel Embiid's the biggest whiner in the league. 76ers fans think Nick Nurse is the biggest whiner in the league. It is a hilarious pairing. It's like, it makes me think of like the old WWE trope of like, the two guys who are about to face each other, but right before the pay-per-view, they're like, but can you coexist as a tag team on your way to the big pay-per-view event? So that's what I thought of. I think from a basketball perspective, it's really cool. I think it's a good fit for the 76ers, at least in the nearer term with the win now window. But yeah, first thought was it's the most entertaining outcome by far.
Yeah. It's interesting because personnel-wise, the Sixers right now couldn't be any different from the type of Raptors teams that Nick Nurse has had. Obviously, the Raptors known for very long, switchy, 6'8 type wings.
Oh, I guess Sixers, they're fat.
Sixers having two, let's say, minimal defense guards, although Maxey has gotten better defensively over the last few months. And then an elite rim protecting center who is slower, but also all of them dominate the ball. And then in the middle of them are sort of a dearth of, let's say, switchy 6'8 wings that we would love to take with Nick to Philadelphia if possible. And then the pace is obviously way slower. So why would you say that it's a good fit if the situations are so different as far as like style of play?
So I think the big thing is Nick Nurse's level of creativity. And that was kind of the book on him coming up through the G League and the British Basketball League and all these things. And obviously we never know how an assistant coach is going to be until he gets the head coaching job. But pretty much right away, you saw there was a level of creativity there. And you know, Kawhi is a fairly like, that's like an out of the box A1 option to build your offense around, but they still had some unique stuff to deal with, they played a lot of two center stuff together that first year with guys who didn't naturally space the floor. And how do you make that work? Trying to fit at that point, a still emerging Pascal Siakam who, you know, had the corner three, but you wanted the ball in his hands and were learning where that fit around Kawhi and Kyle and those guys, that sort of stuff. Obviously he got lots of headlines for the defensive creativity throughout the playoffs and, you know, Boxing One gets the headlines and the sweatshirts and stuff like that. But there was a lot of different stuff that he did. You know, there's the old quote from Eric Name of The Athletic that he got from Giannis, that Giannis was closing his eyes and still seeing all the bodies that he was driving into in the paint. And, you know, in terms of the personnel not being a match necessarily or a seamless transition, I think that was more of, you know, that's what he was dealing with in Toronto. I don't think he had a ton of personnel sway. And I think if he did, the Raptors would have had like at least the second guy who could shoot a three. So that's something that, you know, offensively, I think he's going to probably have a lot of fun with. And then in terms of the defensively limited guards, one thing he did in Toronto, obviously he had Fred VanVleet, who's an unbelievable defensive guard, but something they were able to get out of a Gary Trent Jr. type or while he was still here, a Norman Powell type was, okay, well, what do you do well defensively, even if you're not a good defender? And with Trent and Powell, it was a lot of how do we let you gamble and free you up for steals and jumping passing lanes and stuff like that and cover for you the 2/3 of the time you mess it up. So I don't know. Can they make that work with Tyrese Maxey if there's a good defensive point guard beside him? Absolutely. Can they make it work with Tyrese Maxey if it's not a good defender beside him? I'm a little more curious, but I think that's the biggest thing for me is, you know, the creativity Nurse showed on both sides. I think he's probably really excited to have a piece like Joel Embiid at both ends that can kind of anchor what you're doing instead of, you know, five guys who can all do stuff well, but there's no, like, there was never been a rim protector with the Raptors since the championship year, and certainly not a guy you can dump the ball into and run your offense through to the level of Embiid since Kawhi.
There are some things I want to ask you about. We've all been served up the standard, no offense to anyone who has written this article, but the standard article about Nick Nurse is about A, B, C, D, and E things. So while we're talking to you, I want to ask you about like each one of these things. So one of the things I wanted to ask you about that appears in every single one of these articles is Nick Nurse is very willing to sort of like be hard on his players in public. And they mentioned the Gary Trent story. And I think there's another one. How much of this is real and how much is a couple of anecdotes that are, you know, get blown up to be bigger than what is reality?
It is real if you are not the guy buttering the bread. So Kawhi Leonard never talked about like that in public. Kyle Lowry even never really. And you know, there's a certain level of respect for veterans, I think, too. But yeah, Gary Trent was one. Chris Boucher was one. The year that Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and Stanley Johnson were here, they were getting, you know, kind of put through the ringer. Malachi Flynn's been another one where at least kind of veiled, you know, remarks to, hey, he's not doing what we're asking of him. You know, some of the reporting came out as Nurse left that, and you have to take this stuff with a grain of salt too, because like of course, the bad Nick Nurse stories will come out once he leaves, right? Like everyone, that's always the way it goes. It's the Boston special. But like you did hear a little bit, sometimes that would catch guys off guard because they might hear about it through the press before that conversation has been had inside their own walls. I don't think it's a huge deal. I'd imagine Nick has also like learned from that over time. The Gary Trent one was always fascinating to me too, because they're both Clutch clients. Mm-hmm. So it was like, I wondered, like, is Nick Nurse actually hearing this from Clutch when he goes back to his office? Is it a message from someone at Clutch and not someone with the Raptors who's upset about it? He does it a little bit. I don't think it's like it's anything too extreme, and you're certainly not going to see it with, like, you know, he's not going to do that with Joel Embiid. If James Harden's back, he's probably not going to do that. You know, maybe the odd Maxi quote if he's not going defensively or something like that. I don't think it's too big a deal.
Let me give you one more, Mike. You okay with that?
Yeah.
Give him one more. Nick Nurse leans too heavily on starters and always has a very short rotation.
Yeah. I have a stat for you here.
Okay.
So since Nick Nurse took over at the start of 2018-19 season, the Toronto Raptors have played a player 36 minutes or more in a game 909 times.
Sounds like a lot.
The next highest is 729.
Wow.
So we're talking like a 20% premium on how often your guys play 36 minutes plus. And that has been taken to an extreme the last couple of years. So obviously the championship year, they didn't really do that. Like Kawhi was under pretty strict load management. Kyle Lowry, they were still trying to manage that kind of stuff. Gasol and Ibaka were splitting time at the 5/pseudo 4 mm-hmm. some of the time anyway. So it wasn't as extreme then. But like the last couple of years, especially, if you fire up the minutes per game leaderboard, it looks like the Thibodeau Bulls. It's just Raptor, 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 Raptor. Siakam, Van Vliet, Barnes, and Anunoby, I think, were all top 20 in minutes by the end of last year. So that part is real. And one thing I saw some Sixers fans excited about is the, like, Nick Nurse will play young guys and have a long leash with them. That is not particularly true in my recent experience there. If you're good and you're a young guy, absolutely, you're going to get every chance. And like, you know, he was a big part of Siakam's development and Van Vliet's development. And, you know, OG Anunoby's defense keeps him on the floor, and they'll throw him the odd, like, okay, man, yeah, run a pick and roll or two. You earned it with that defense. But like, this is not a team that has gone more than 8 deep very with much regularity the last couple of years.
Yeah, this is my number one Nick Nurse concern, because he does Tom Thibodeau-esque play his guys way too many minutes in the regular season when it doesn't matter. You don't need to be doing that. It's the most like Doc Riversy thing. Doc had a strict rotation for the most part, but was never as, you know, it's just, there's no reason to do it. Is it, do you think it's because like everyone keeps saying, oh, not playing the young guys, but like aside from the main young guys that have developed well in the Raptors organization, whether it was under Nurse or a little bit before, like there's not really young prized prospects he's not playing. Like Malachi Flynn hasn't been as good as I thought he would be, and just plays a little bit. Like, is it like Delano Banton that people are asking for more minutes out of? Like who are they talking about specifically?
So Banton is actually one that like there was some context to suggest this year that like part of the rift between Nurse and the front office was about guys like that. And like, mm-hmm. can you have the patience to let a guy play 12 minutes and play through those bumps and stuff? And there were parts of this season where like neither Banton nor Flynn was in the rotation. So like their backup point guard was just like, we'll stagger it so Scotty's running point. And like,
yeah, and Gary Trent.
That's cool. It's like, it's good that he can do that and good reps for him. But like, that's not having a good backup point guard, especially with the starting point guard in Van Vliet, who you'd love to not play 40 minutes a game anymore. So that it's a great question. It's player development is always at least to some degree a chicken or egg. Like, would the guy have been better if he got more development time? You know, we saw like Christian Koloko got mm-hmm. time in the rotation for parts of this year because the defense was there and they were willing to live with the offensive shortcomings. I think if you go back a little bit, there are some other guys who didn't work out here that, you know, O'Shea Brissett's one who's had success somewhere else. Yuta Watanabe had success in Brooklyn after he mm-hmm. left. I think people look at those things, but yeah. you're right. Like, is Malachi Flynn just like a bit of a bust at 29, or could Nick Nurse have gotten more out of him by letting the second unit run some pick and roll instead of just like the breakneck transition stuff. It's hard to tell. I do think, you know, like if I'm Jaden Springer, for example, I maybe don't feel the best about my chances to get some playing time out of the gate and really run with that unless I just have like a bonkers training camp at this point.
Well, that's obviously very upsetting to me for me to hear.
I know.
Do you think that is like a front office disconnect issue that say Nick and Masai didn't agree on the kinds of players that were required to help this team, and so then Nick would be like, well, the buck stops with me and they're not playing if I don't think they're good enough? And now that, you know, Nick Nurse and Daryl Morey obviously have a relationship, having coached for him before with the Rio Grande Valley Vipers and being a little bit more on the same page. This is Daryl's first coaching hire. Obviously, mm-hmm. Doc was hired before Daryl got there. First coaching hire since D'Antoni with the Rockets many years ago. Do you think that this is now more like we're going to see eye to eye on the kinds of players that we will want to play and the kinds of rotations we'll have?
I would hope so. And I would imagine, you know, when we hear things like a Joel Embiid centric plan or whatever, like part of those conversations were like, okay, how do you see an offense working most optimally around Joel Embiid? What kind of pieces do we have? What kind of pieces do we need to go out and get? And I think with the Raptors, I think there was probably real alignment on what makes a good defender within a Nick Nurse defensive system, but maybe a bit of redundancy when everyone on the roster is a power forward and there's not a lot of shooting. So, you know, Delano Banton, you can put him out there, but if you're also trying to get Scottie Barnes minutes as a pseudo point guard, and then, you know, the guys spacing the floor are non-shooters as well because you didn't have any bench shooters all season, there's probably an element of that. I'd imagine him and Morey are hash that out. And like the thing that Nick Nurse, that like knowing where he came from and what he came up as and talking to him a little bit, even when he was an assistant coach, I think the thing that he's probably going to be most excited about with this team is like the Sixers shot they had the best 3-point percentage in the league last year, and they shot a decent but not elite volume of them. Yeah. I'd imagine this is going to be like a heavy, heavy 3-point team and a lot of emphasis on the ability to shoot and move without the ball around Embiid. And that's something we know Morey loves from the Harden-centric offenses in Houston. It's something I'm sure Nick would have loved a little bit more of in Toronto. So I definitely do. I'd imagine that was a big part of these conversations. And Nick's probably taking some of what he was able to do defensively with what the Raptors had. And, you know, you'll have to apply it to some lesser defenders here. But yeah, the extra offensive juice from guys who could shoot, and even a guy like Maxey that can put pressure on the rim, like the Raptors just didn't have that. So I'd guess Nick is pretty excited on the offensive end.
All right. I have a question for you about Nick Nurse's, like his way, right after we talk about Body Bio. Now, CJ, you have to pop up for a second because we have a voicemail that got left at 833 Lickface. There was a question for you regarding Body Bio.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Dave. I'm calling with a serious question. If CJ is on the Body Bio website ordering Gut Plus, does he put in the promo code FIRECJ? I'd like an answer.
CJ, if you order from Body Bio, and would you use code FIRECJ for 20% off?
Yeah, I got to take my discounts when I can get them. I can't be paying full price these days.
Huge. In this economy? Come on, man. Whether you're getting Gut Plus, which Mike has enjoyed to much success, Gut Plus, the only gut supplement you need, forget about those probiotics you're taking. Let Gut Plus eliminate the bad bacteria from your body. Allow your body to create its own probiotics, which is what it's supposed to do, or Elite, which was a lifesaver for me. For years, cramps in my calves, cramps in my hamstrings, cramps in my abs, all that kind of stuff. Elite is the hydration solution, pure electrolytes, no added sugar, no artificial colors, no anything, just pure electrolytes. Whether you're using either of those things or anything at the Body Bio website, bodybio.com, use code FIRECJ, all one word, FIRECJ, for 20% off. We love Body Bio, family owned and operated supplement company right here in New Jersey, and have been a sponsor with us, I think, for a couple of years now. Believe in their products. And the good thing about having a smaller supplement company like that is like, science changes all the time. They're nimble. They can update shit. Go to bodybio.com. Use code FIRECJ for 20% off. BodyBio. Okay, Blake. Another headline we got from the Nick Nurse articles, including one from our very own Mike O'Connor. Nick Nurse is a psychopath. I ask you, is Nick Nurse a psychopath?
No. He can be a little intense.
Okay.
There are character traits with Nick Nurse. Like, he's easily top three most memeable coach in the NBA. Like that, like he doing the Slavic squat on the sidelines, the big over, like over the top overreactions to, sure, to officials and things like that.
Doc is right there too.
Yeah, Doc is up there. And Doc also has like the voice. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously we don't do like audio memes, I guess, but like Doc's voice is like perfect for, mm-hmm, for that kind of stuff. But so Nick's a little over the top with that stuff. And, you know, there have certainly been times during his tenure where there's an intensity that you can feel. And that carry, obviously there was some drama around the Raptors this year and in the bubble year and things like that, those things aren't secrets. But I think most of it is just like a passion and competitive thing. And then some of the off court stuff, like, you're not gonna call it psychopath, but like he is a character. Like, Spike, I heard you talking about the NN hats beforehand. Like, at one point there was like a limited run. I think five of them were available through his charity here. And like, his charity events here have like any of the big Canadian music artists that he can get out. So like I think he's done stuff with some City in Color, Daniel Caesar, Neo was here this year for one. So like, the big one is there's a band here and they're not, I don't think they're well known in the US, but they're called Arkells, and he like has played on stage with them and stuff. And I think the closest Philly equivalent is like Mount Joy. It's like, yeah, that kind of music. Mm-hmm. So while I'd personally like try to nudge him to like, hey, get in with the Menzingers or something like that, I think Mount Joy or something like that might be the place. So there's a, I think people are a little quick to add all of that to his, like, his face is always red and he's always screaming on the sideline. And then just, it paints this whole picture of a really intense and out there guy.
Well, it feels like music is to Nick Nurse the way like golf is to Doc. It feels like that's the way he releases. And he really just wants to do that.
And does he cancel practice to play music? Like, does he? Like Doc?
I don't know that he's canceled practice for music, but I definitely know like when he's on the road, he'll like go to historic like recording studios or like old record. Like he's just like always doing stuff like that on the road. And then, you know, I mean, here, like he literally went on stage with Arkells and performed after the championship, like busted, amazing, out the guitar and, and hit a little piano and stuff like that. Like, there's everything's on the, if there's success, everything is on the table in terms of those extracurriculars.
Well, Mount Joy is a friend of the pod. So if Nick Nurse wants to play guitar with Mount Joy, I'm sure we can hook that up. Perfect. Right? That'd be easy. We've got a lot of musician friends of the pod. So I'm sure we could put him in a number of bands. We could do a whole festival where Nick plays with a bunch of different bands.
Honestly, thought about doing that here at some point. It's like it on it. Like, so I've been doing radio more the last 2 years, but when I was on the beat and around all the time, it like really helped my relationship with Nick Nurse, having a bunch of music friends in common as he like got his footing in the city and in the music scene here. So hopefully, also, this is one thing I will say, I did not ask Nick Nurse this, and this is for you guys, I think, like, of all the coaches in the NBA, if you rank them in terms of who's the likeliest to do a live Ricky, Nick Nurse has got to be like 1A on the NBA coaches list. Like, he loves that kind of stuff. I think you guys, if there's success, you guys are gonna have a lot of fun with
it. Well, that's interesting, because Doc got hired, you know, during the pandemic, during, while we were still, everyone was in our house, so we never really built a relationship with Doc, and then we pretty quickly went anti. Mm-hmm. Or at least I was middle for a while, but also still insulting him in various ways. So I don't think there was, we never even tried, but I was wondering, should we try to establish a relationship with Nick where we get him on the pod and bring him out and stuff?
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't know what the Sixers PR situation is like, but like, yeah, I mean, Nick was doing everything in this city after the championship. He was the mayor, basically.
I think the key is to have him at a live Ricky before the season ever starts.
Before anything
goes wrong. Yeah,
that'd be nice. Yeah. That's might be smart for him also, because then obviously he'd get at least a couple months of goodwill the way Tobias got from us as well. So Nick came into the Raptors under Dwayne Casey as like his offensive coordinator, essentially. And, but the aside from 2019, the championship year when they finished fifth in both offense and defense, per Basketball Reference, his offense has been middle of the pack, and his half court offense has been way worse than that. Yeah. The defense has been always pretty much top half of the league, pretty good. What do you think is like his guiding ethos offensively? Knowing that obviously he didn't have control of the personnel and would probably have preferred more than one guy on the team who could shoot.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, and this will probably be the biggest adjustment for the Sixers coming from where they were last year, is he's huge on transition offense and pushing off of defensive rebound. The Raptors the last 3 years, and part of this is personnel with the length they had and not having a good half-court offense. But there was a huge premium placed on forcing turnovers and even taking gambles, even if, you know, it leaves you in a bad situation. Like I used the Gary Trent example earlier, but like the Raptors were live ball turnovers, because they needed to be a good transition offense to get by, because the half court offense just wasn't there. And the last 3 years, I think they were top three in transition volume and top five in transition effectiveness every year. So that's a big one. And then semi related to that is the Raptors have really prioritized winning the possession game, right? So have more, force more turnovers than you turn the ball over and win the rebounding battle and things like that. Part of that is that Nick Nurse has been pretty free relative to the average NBA team, letting guys crash the offensive glass. And I wonder what that looks like for Philly, because, you know, the Raptors, obviously you have Joel Embiid, that can go a long way, but like I think the Sixers were like bottom five in offensive rebounding. Yeah. And some of that is like you play a more half-court oriented style, you don't have the defensive horses to get back in transition, so you can't take the same, you know, crashing risks. But that's something that I think the Sixers would be well served to do a little bit more of that with some of their off guards and wings anyway. But it's been a pretty strong Nick Nurse principle of like, yeah, not just one guy crashing, like you can crash from a couple different spots, and just if you get the read wrong, you better get on your horse getting back. So those have been kind of the two things. Again, I'm really curious what it looks like with actual spacing. You know, they've tried to be pretty creative with using non-centers in, you know, post up and elbow situations, a lot of like screen the screener kind of stuff. You know, they used a lot of guards screening for Siakam. So a Siakam Lowry pick and roll or a Siakam Van Vliet pick and roll was like often their crunch time go to. So curious to see how some of that stuff goes out. But the biggest one that stood out to me looking at the Sixers profile is like, how much is he going to get these guys moving in transition and on the offensive glass to kind of steal those extra like high efficiency, but like low likelihood possessions?
Yeah, it's in order to do that, there will have to be changes in personnel, because they just don't have, like, if Nick has conversation with Daryl where Daryl like wants to give him more of the kinds of guys that he had in Toronto, like I'd feel better right now about like Jalen McDaniels coming back to this team than a George Niang. It's hard to know for all coaches, especially coaches that have only been one place, how much of their style is, I am just sort of going with the personnel that I have, versus these are my like deeply held beliefs and the kinds of teams and the kinds of players I want to have.
Yeah. And like Nick talked a lot when he first came on the job and when he was assistant even, and, you know, getting to know him a little bit, like part of the draw with him was he'd been in so many weird situations. He was a player coach. He's in the British League. He was in a bunch of different G League organizations and stuff.
He's a little bit like the PJ Tucker of coaches.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, so part of the draw I think was, well, I am so used to just changing to like, hey, a D League star might not show up today because he got called up to the NBA and we don't have our number one offensive option. And I know how to adjust and stuff. The Raptors had a lot of continuity the last couple of years and some very clear roster limitations. So again, to go back to the kind of excitement term, I'm very excited to see what that looks like, because I don't think, like, I'd be surprised if everything that the Raptors did, at least offensively, is something he's married to versus this. We just had a bunch of 6 foot eight guys and none of them are great at pressuring the rim or shooting or anything like that. Defensively, I think there's probably more that'll carry over. Like, I think he's a huge proponent of limiting driving space and taking risks at the elbows and things like that to force turnovers. And I don't know, if I have Joel Embiid as a rim protector, I'm even more geared up to take those risks in terms of point of attack defense and getting in like pinch lanes and stuff like that, because you have Joel Embiid back there instead of, I don't know, Scotty Barnes protecting the rim or a rookie in Christian Coloco.
There was obviously you want to, it's good to work with somebody that you have a work for, somebody who you have a previous good working relationship with. And the mentions that Nurse was wanted to work with Maury, I think is not surprising. Mm-hmm. But is that a statement at all about his relationship with Masai, or what do you think, that was a fine working relationship?
I think it was fine at first, and you know, similar to like a lot of things have gone wrong for the Raptors over the last couple of years, and I don't think they're Nick Nurse's fault specifically or Masai Ujiri's fault specifically. I think they, you know, chased what worked for the championship and tried to, you know, keep living off of that and extended it as long as they could. And that kind of set them back a little bit, and they got away from some of the player development stuff. They also just, like, they had traded a billion picks away over the years. So, you know, Malachi Flynn suddenly becomes the only development piece. Mm-hmm. You know, there were some sounds suggestions. Familiar. What's that? Sorry.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
That's some good continuity for Nick coming into Philadelphia.
So there were some, you know, obviously any coach or GM are going to have their moments. There were some instances where it sounded like there was a butting of heads, you know, the odd red flag that, like, you know, early in the season when Scotty Barnes was going through it and there was some talk of, like, potential attitude stuff, like Masai dropped in on a road trip in Brooklyn rather than the coaching staff handling that, some stuff like that. And I do think there was, again, some friction about, like, hey, we're in win now mode, but you keep asking me to play all these developmental guys who aren't ready for NBA minutes and they're not good yet. I think there was some of that. I don't think Nick and Masai will, like, I don't think a couple years down the line we'll find out that they were, like, talking negatively about each other. Like, I think it was mostly okay, but even at the end, and it was just like both sides were ready for something new and a clean break. So I didn't take it too much as a shot or like a veiled thing on the way out.
We talked about a little bit of movement with Embiid and having a guy to work the offense through. One of the things that the Sixers did in the playoffs for all of Embiid's career is when he has the ball, pretty much everyone is standing still. And it makes it easy for coaches, the highest priority of one, or the one they face the most being Nick Nurse, to send a lot of 6'8 guys at him to disrupt passing lanes, to make it hard on him, to just confuse him. In the Boston series, especially the last couple of games, he really reverted back to the sort of guy that he was when Nick Nurse's team held him to 0 points in one game. Do you think offensively, like, in a world where, you know, we heard the stories and the Woj story that Spike read earlier was like, Nurse pitched a vision for an offense centered around Joel Embiid. Obviously he became the MVP by, like, operating at the nail. Do you have any idea? And I think that'll continue. Do you have any idea of what the sort of, like, Embiid has the ball, he's your guy. Like, does Nick know how to scheme against himself, I guess, in a sense? Like, because he's the one that made it, one of the guys that made it the hardest for Joel over his career so far.
Yeah, I think that's a really good place to come from when you're trying to design an offense for a guy. Is like, okay, I was on the other side, and what was I trying to take away? And what would have messed up what I was trying to do, right? Like, if I have a second 6'9 guy come across on a base go, and then Fred VanVleet is ready to dig down from the top if Embiid goes back to the middle, like, okay, what's a counter to that? What do we do with Fred's guy when Fred helps off, or the guy in the weak corner? What do we do with him? So I think that's probably something he's given a lot of thought to, because the Raptors had to give a lot of thought to it. you know, probably the best center that Nick Nurse has coached at the NBA level is Jonas Valanciunas. So, you know, and that was half a season. I will say Nick Nurse was Jonas becoming a good passer and a 3-point shooter. Like, that was a big part of that was Nick Nurse spent a bunch of time with Jonas in Lithuania one summer. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of, there's the one thing I take from that is like, he really, really hammered dribble handoff stuff with Jonas then. And then when Marc Gasol came in, that was a big thing as well. A lot of DHO, a lot of use that big body and the fact that you can handle a little bit to create separation for your guard. And then you get on the move and get that ball back, right? Like a lot of DHO give and go kind of stuff. And Joel Embiid is like astronomically more gifted offensively than the 2019 version of Marc Gasol was, right? So I think there's probably a lot, and the Raptors weren't exactly the best for off-ball movement, but they also didn't have, they almost never, you know, operated from rote post-ups or like they didn't have that guy to go in and operate at the net. They try it with Siakam or Barnes a little bit, but they were a lot more, given their personnel, about run a pick and roll to get the switch and then one-on-one attack the switch. And, you know, maybe there's a baseline cut or something like that. But I think there'll be a little more creativity in terms of, you know, split cuts and what do you like, you know, lifting guys out of the corner when the double comes and stuff. Like, there's a lot you can do. I think, yeah, that's probably a big part of what the conversation was, is like, well, this is what I did, and this is how you would counter adjust to me if you weren't Doc Rivers, you know?
If, now, obviously you'd just be guessing here, but I want to know if there's an obvious thing that popped into your head. Both Adrian Griffin and Nick Nurse were finalists for the Bucks job. They both met with Giannis. It keeps getting repeatedly said, Giannis is endorsed Adrian Griffin for that. If you were to guess, why would you guess that after meeting both of them, Giannis would want Adrian Griffin rather than Nick Nurse?
So, I mean, there's also the, and this is maybe PR spin, but the Nick Nurse pulled out of the.
Yeah. Seemed like bullshit.
But the big thing is every player loves Adrian Griffin. Like Fred VanVleet was on the Shams, you guys referenced the Shams hit earlier. And, you know, he spoke the world of Griffin. I think Griffin as an ex-player, someone who's really spent a lot of time at the player level and the coaching level grinding, that resonates with some guys. Griffin also, I mean, again, we don't know what an assistant coach is going to be like until they are in the head coaching job. But, you know, he speaks defense at a level that a lot of guys connect with and resonate with. So. Maybe an element of that. I think it's also worth noting that just like Nick and Adrian Griffin, like remain close. Like there was nothing in this year of like a rift between them or like any thought of like Griffin trying to politic for Nurse's job or anything like that. Like they are, as I understand it, still pretty close and like saw basketball the same way and stuff like that. So I think that just speaks more to Adrian Griffin as a dude. Like I'm sure there are, like there's a pretty infamous story from the championship run where Nick Nurse is like using an example from like his G League days, and Kawhi basically tells him to stop talking about the G League. And there's another one of like Nick Nurse talking about adjustments in the Bucks series or whatever, and Kawhi being like, "I'm guarding Giannis. That's the adjustment." Yeah. So I think I don't know. Maybe it's a certain personality types match with Nick the best, and Embiid being someone who might be a little more willing to speak up and say something like that, they're a better fit than Giannis, who by all accounts with Budenholzer was like, no, that's the coach. I follow what he says. I trust it and stuff like that. Maybe there's, you know, Embiid just is a more collaborative or more willing to put his own input in kind of thing. I'm reaching here. I think mostly it's just guys really like Adrian Griffin.
To open my own gaping wound here. One of many. Sixers up 3-2 against Boston. Come out flattish, pretty flat game six, but Boston doesn't want to put them away. The like last game and a half of that series, which I'm, what do you think that like, what did you see watching the way Doc coached those series and the way that the team responded or didn't respond to Doc versus what Nick Nurse would have done in a similar situation? I know it's a tough question to answer, but
Yeah, I mean, without being in the room and like I've watched a lot of Doc Rivers teams over the years, it seems to be a bit of a pattern there, right? And that's, you know, what is that exactly? Does your voice not carry as much weight in those spots? Do you just not have something to reach down and grab? I'm not sure. I think there's real, there should be confidence with Nick Nurse doing that kind of stuff. The Raptors championship run, you know, they got down 2-0 to the Bucks and came back from that 1-4 straight. They blew a game 5 that against the Warriors that they really should have won. They had a chance to wrap it up on home court and were going back to Golden State. And that was like a huge pressure thing. Even the Philly series, like Philly kicked the shit out of them a couple times. Sorry, I hope I can
swear. Yeah,
but like Philly destroyed them a couple times in that series. Yeah. And like it kind of felt at times like, well, if Joel Embiid's not running to the bathroom at every timeout, this series could be a wrap. And you know, that team had loads of leadership.
That like, did happen.
Fuck. Marc Gasol, yeah. Serge Ibaka, Kawhi, Kyle Lowry, like Fred VanVleet was young at that point, but you obviously see the kind of guy he's turned into now. Like that team had loads of guys, but I think that the Raptors pulled out of a lot of situations like that is encouraging. They did the run it back year where no one really bought into them, and they took that Celtics team to 7, even though Pascal was like a husk of himself that year. They were like a possession away from knocking off a Celtics team that was a really, really good team. And maybe the Raptors go back to the finals. And even the series last year, you know, Philly up 3-0 and the Raptors at least make it a pain in their ass.
Yeah.
I think there is a consistency. The Raptors are also like the fake comeback Kings. Like I don't know, this isn't a stat, but if you could find the stat for like most times a team has been down 20 in a game, but get the game to within like 6 to 9 points in the final couple minutes, the Raptors are the Kings of that. Like there is a consistency to Nick Nurse's ability to get guys to not tap out when things are going poorly.
It's nice. It would just be nice to be a pain in someone else's ass. Like that feels like an ideal, like for other teams that the Sixers just haven't been. Although they didn't blow that many leads this year in the regular season, but obviously the playoffs didn't fucking matter. Do you think that Nick Nurse will or should apologize for the Kawhi shot?
No.
You don't think he should say like there was a conspiracy with the rims and the magnets and it was a
well the magnets thing, yeah should have I never was actually gone the one in the rafters at Scotiabank
you did Arena, the magnets.
Operating the magnets yeah yeah no the honestly the bigger concern that I have is when JJ Redick got rumored as a Raptors candidate, he has to apologize for being like the highlight truth and be like no travel on the Kawhi shot. That's been his talking point forever. Travel. No,
it was a travel and the clock started late, which is frustrating.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to complain about it for the rest of my life.
Yeah. I just, and like, there's also like, I'm still shocked Serge Ibaka did an offensive cylinder interference, one of the bounces, because he's like standing right underneath it.
Yeah. Yeah. B-ball Paul would have for sure.
Yeah. And then, I mean, obviously the Raptors, lose in overtime if that goes to OT and yeah.
That all you got, Mike?
Is there anything, are there any like from a Raptors fan base perspective, last question that like you're, that they started getting frustrated about Nurse the way that like every coach has their things you're seeing, obviously you saw with Doc, you're seeing with Joe Mazzulla.
Yeah. Two biggest things are overplaying guys.
Yeah,
that became a thing. There. And like, of course, like we don't know the sports science stuff and they have more data than minutes and stuff like that. But anytime you're like lapping everyone else in the league in minutes, it's going to stand out. So that was a big one. And then this didn't just start with Nick Nurse, like the DeMar, Kyle, Dwayne era of the Raptors were bad for this too. But I think Nick Nurse's tone setting had an effect of this. The Raptors were a really whiny team. And I didn't like they were. Usually top 10 in technical fouls. There's a lot of like ref talk. And obviously all 30 fan bases think the refs are out to get them and it's not great. But I've always been of the mind if your coach is going to be like a loud demonstrative person with the refs, that's cool. As long as like, that's a, hey, let me take care of this. And nobody on the, none of the players do that too. And you guys chill and I'll do it. I don't think Raptors fans liked having a reputation as the whiny team.
Makes sense. Last thing. any relate, because I'm thinking about him as a possible Tobias trade or centered around it. There's no issue between Nick Nurse and DeMar DeRozan, is there?
No, no. The DeMar DeRozan trade happened, you know, like as a part of a bigger thing. Like Nick was an assistant under Dwayne, obviously, here. I think most of that was DeMar and Masai, where, you know, that summer they had kind of told him, hey, the rumors were out there, but like, we're not trading because the odds at that point were so low that a Kawhi deal would come together. I don't think Nick Nurse had much with that at all.
Okay.
Well, he's our psycho now, buddy. Our psycho now. So
I think you guys are going to have a lot of fun with him, especially over like the next 2 years. Like all the issues that cropped up with Nick in Toronto, and they're not even that big issues because he remains a very good coach. But like a lot of it was, okay, you won a championship, and how do you transition out of like super win now mode where every tiny little detail could be the difference between a championship and not? If that stuff wears on you after like 5 years as a franchise or as a player or whatever, like the 76ers are in such a win now mode and in Joel Embiid's peak that like at least for the next 2-3 years, I think it's the right guy for the job. I think he does the micro stuff so extremely well, and he's so creative that even if some of the, to use your term, psycho stuff or the stuff that wore in Toronto by year five, like none of that's going to really matter in years 1 and 2 if the wins are coming.
I think that's reasonable.
Blake, you as a guest look and sound better than any guest we've ever had. You're a true professional. We wish nothing but the best for you and the psychotic Raptors fans. The Sixers fans are fucking lunatics, but online Raptors fans are just Swifty level crazy. So we wish you all the best.
It's a lot now. Yeah. Thank you for that. I really appreciate you guys having me on. I love the pod. I want to get down for a live Ricky one time. I always have friends send me pictures and stuff. It's like Paul Reed's there. What the hell?
Yeah.
I'm like we get to do a little bit of that here. Like Bobby Webster came out to an event here in Toronto that Will Liu and Alex Wong, who have a Raptor show with me, like they're my teammates at Sportsnet, and Bobby Webster came out to that, and it was a huge deal. But I want, and Chris Boucher has done it before too, but not to the rights to Ricky level. I want some of that here in Toronto. You guys are the best.
Thank you, Blake. You, man.
Also, I'd like a coach of my own that I could do an episode like this with too. <Sure. please.
laughs> You can have Doc. You want Doc?
Yeah, he's available. I'm
okay on that front. You got any good assistants?
Everybody wanted Sam Cassell.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. All right, man.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, buddy.
Appreciate you. Well, I think that will make everybody feel good. He was very positive about Nick Nurse. Yeah. Very positive.
Yeah.
The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast brought to you by Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Whew. Here's the deal, fella or fella or lady, whatever. You have a dog. You care about your dog. And if you truly care about your dog, you're going to get your dog a Big Barker dog bed because it is the only dog bed on the market that is a real bed. You know, dogs are just like humans in not every way, but in some ways. And the ways they're the same is they have joints and they sleep. And if you're sleeping on a bed that is not properly supportive, how do you feel in the morning? You feel like shit. Now imagine you did that every night. It would catch up to you, man. It would catch up to you, and it catches up to dogs too, but not if they sleep on a Big Barker, which has been engineered by experts to support your dog's joints. Make sure as your dog gets older, your dog still can get around, still can run, still can jump. The arthritis, shit like that that happens as the dog gets older, sleep on a Big Barker, it will help mitigate those problems. Go to BigBarker.com/Ricky. That is BigBarker.com/Ricky. Get the Big Barker dog bed, process pup patches. Your dog is happy. All these claims that I'm making, Penn Vet did a study. All true. 17% improvement in joint function, 21% reduction in pain severity. Yes, 12% reduction in joint stiffness. Big Barker dog beds. You can see it when you look at it. See the difference. You think about the bed that your dog's on right now, lies on the bed, sinks right to the floor. That's not what a mattress is. That's what a pillow is. You want a real mattress. Says Big Barker, but all sizes, from tiny little dog, the Barker Jr., up to the big fucking XL Big Barker. 10-year warranty. The foam doesn't flatten or they replace it for free. 1-year at-home trial. if you don't like it, if your dog doesn't like it, full refund, and they'll pay for the shipping. Handmade in the USA. Big Barker dog bed. So here we stand with the NBA Finals, Mike. Denver Nuggets versus Miami Heat. I didn't feel anything good about the Celtics like losing. I didn't get like the normal joy, I guess, that I should have gotten with the Celtics losing. Did you feel anything?
I got some.
Okay.
I got some. Yeah. I mean, especially it happening in Boston, for them to come back and tie it at 3-3, mm-hmm. go to a game seven. We're going to be the first team to do it, only to lose in such a Sixers game 70 way in front of their fans was actually very sweet. So I like that. I was building something while I was watching during the game. And so I was sort of distracted by how much I fucking suck at that stuff. But it did work. And then, so I was happy at even despite the fact that I got like my hands all beat up from whatever bullshit thing I was building. Yeah. I mean, I mostly feel like Miami's finals run is like all Jimmy, like look at the players on their team. Like they're not that good. They just find a way to get guys. Like Caleb Martin is a guy that I like, tailor-made guy that I wanted and loved. Derek White, obviously I was such a big Derek White fan coming out of Colorado. Like they traded up to draft fucking Anzej Bicechnik. Like I just can't, it's so frustrating watching other teams have guys that either like a couple years into their careers, they go like, oh, like, yeah, we're athletic and we figured it out and we had time to work through it. And like, we are good now and we're helpful. And the Sixers just don't, they got lucky with Maxey. And everybody else was like, has never really helped win a playoff game that they have like developed or had or traded out of. But I really did get really re-mad at the Anzej Bicechnik trade that Colangelo made, because it is the worst trade of all time. They simply just were like, we need to have a stash guy. And so they traded up to get somebody that sucked. Just so they're like, we don't want to make all these picks. We'll just stash somebody. And they did. And he's never going, he played like 4 minutes in the NBA and he sucked. Total ass. It was honestly like worse than anything else Colangelo did. I can see you getting like frustrated by me bringing this up again.
I thought we were going to tell you,
it drives me crazy. They fucking trade. They're like, they could have drafted anybody from France. They would have been like, hey, we need some guy who works at a coffee shop in France just because we don't want to pay anybody else. Like it was the dumbest thing in the world. And I don't talk about it enough because Colangelo did so many other crazy things that this was truly like the worst of them. It truly was the worst of them. Look at the list of players drafted after they traded up for Anzej Bicechnik. And I don't care how to pronounce his name anymore because he's fucking, my mouth starts drooling with blood when I'm talking about it because it's disgusting. Yes, it kills me. But yeah, I don't feel that, I don't know. I don't feel that thrilled that it's Miami again. I feel just total regret and remorse watching Jimmy succeed for someone else because he obviously is the perfect player to play with Embiid and he has gotten so much better and he is such a fucking playoff guy that it would be nice to have him here, but like, yeah, they just as a team, like they're not that good of a team. They are arguably the worst finals team since like 2001 Sixers to get to the finals. And they could win because Jimmy's a psycho and they play hard.
The LeBron team was pretty bad.
I think, but it's still LeBron. It's still LeBron.
So that's a good point. The thing that they have in Miami is, one of the easiest ways to fuck up player development is to have a new person in charge of it every 2 years, mm-hmm. every 3 years. And yes, it absolutely helps that Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra are good at their jobs. That absolutely helps. But when you have a coach who has a president of basketball operations that he knows has his back, they know they're working together. They like, there is a cohesiveness to a team like that that allows you to invest in players that may take a while to work out, to cut bait on players that aren't going to work out and know that it's not going to cost you your job if you do so. Like all of those things, I think it makes it a lot more likely that you're going to hit on players and have player development stories when it's the same people developing the players. Do you know what I mean? Like, and the Sixers have not had that consistency in entire lives. No, you know?
Definitely not. Yeah. I mean, and Miami would be in such absolute hell Spoelstra may have gotten fired by this point if the Sixers didn't just give them Jimmy Butler. And I, at the time, it's been enough fucking time for me to say, like, Sixers, someone in the Sixers front office at the time trying to tell me over the phone that, like, actually getting Josh Richardson for Jimmy Butler was a really good thing. And Jimmy could have just walked for nothing. And instead, they allowed him to go to Miami, where they've been to the conference finals nearly every year since then, because he's excellent. And they built, they already had the, you know, system that they now just placed him perfectly in the middle of. And it's just like, Josh Richardson sucked here. He's a fine eighth guy on a team, whatever. And this, and they would be an absolute hell if the Sixers didn't just hand them Jimmy Butler because they chose wrong. And they have chosen wrong over and over again. Who am I rooting for? I guess Miami, because I made that bet. So I would like that money.
Right, 45-1, right?
At 45-1. So that'll be nice.
You have to pick Denver, though, right? I mean, especially considering this. I mean, they're better.
I do think Miami's going to win game one. Ooh, I think there's a level of rust, them just being like absolute psychos. I think I could see them just going in there and doing it. I think obviously Denver is right to be favored. I wouldn't say it is. It's minus 400, which is a lot. And I don't think it's that much, because the run that Miami is on and the belief that they have in Jimmy and the fact that this is the last series, win or go home, leave it all out in the court. I think that they're very good. And even this is like, Jimmy's just very good, and they play hard, and Lowry makes good decisions. And I love watching Lowry just like push the tempo and find buckets out of nothing. Him driving and just like Max Strus cuts to the basket and they get a layup out of it. Like, there's just stuff that they do because they play hard that these Sixers teams just haven't done. It's really frustrating. And obviously, like, I love Bam as a defensive player. I really liked him in college and as a young player. He sucks on offense. He can pass. But like, anytime Bam goes up for a jumper, or any really offensive move, like, he's not good. He's not. And they're in the finals because of Jimmy and because of how hard they play.
Yeah.
It's really impressive. And Spoelstra, obviously.
I mean, Jimmy has had great playoff series before, and he was great against Milwaukee, but this was not, like, this series was not, and he had some great games in this series, but this was not like a Jimmy goes nuclear series at all.
No, certainly not the back end of it, no.
Yeah, I think if they have an issue, it's going to be that, like, that series grinded the shit out of Miami, must have at the end. And I think one of the things that affected Butler toward the end, you could see it in game six, was just like, he just didn't seem to have the legs to get the ball over the rim. And I do wonder, I know you're going to laugh, but like, having Hero will probably help a little bit, I think, at least. Denver is just such a good offensive team.
Yeah.
You're not going to win games like 97 to 92. I don't think,
you know, I don't know. I think sometimes it's like, well, they have to outscore him, or they have to match his pace, or they have to go the opposite way and slow him down and stuff. Ultimately, they're just going to have to be more effective at their stuff than Denver's their stuff, regardless of the pace they play at. They've been better without Hero because their defense has been better. And their defense has been excellent. And if Hero comes back like game three, like they're saying, then he's going to get exploited a lot. And he's obviously not healthy to begin with. But I could see him also being helpful to at least like lighten the load on Jimmy for some period run of time, like running pick and roll, getting to his mid range, getting to the basket, like drawing in the defense and stuff.
He's a good pick and roll ball handler.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. But yeah. I think you have to look at it a little bit like an indictment on his game that they have been better without him. I think, you know, we talked about Jordan Poole as a possible target, and with Bob Myers leaving Golden State, I wonder if they would be quicker to get rid of Jordan Poole now that it's not the guy that signed him isn't there anymore. But like, Jordan Poole as a, like, you know, Jamal Murray, Jordan Poole, Tyler Hero, those kinds of players, like, in order to be that kind of player where you're like a little bit undersized as a two guard that like mostly just scores, you got to be really, really good because you're exploitable in so many other areas. And Jamal Murray has obviously broken through to be good enough, really good, to make up for all the other stuff. And I don't think Hero is yet, and Poole is obviously way up and down as well. So
Speaking of pool, we got this voicemail that you should have to answer to. This is 833 Lickface.
Okay.
Hey, Spike. Hey, Mike. Hey, CJ. This is Kent from Alabama, and I am losing my mind at the idea that Mike has now planted in mine and maybe even Daryl Morey's head of bringing Jordan Poole to the Sixers. What, Jordan Poole would fit in perfectly with the energy of the Sixers in game 6 and 7 of the series against the Celtics. He's just, he either disappears or makes terrible decisions every time the lights are brightest. I cannot imagine, what is he good at? He's not big. He's not strong. He shoots 34% from three. I looked, Mike made me look up statistics. You know, he has 252 turnovers this season. That's the fourth highest in the entire league. Why would we bring a 4-year, $32 million a year contract onto our team just to get off one season of Tobias Harris's money? It, does it add flexibility? It's immediately seen to be a toxic contract. I'm stressed out.
I like that he's just like, what is he good at? He's not big. He's not strong. It's like, well, those aren't like things to be good at. It is definitely like, as I said, like a risky potential move. He is extremely talented with the ball in his hands. He makes bad decisions for sure. You hope that there's a long line of guys that have played on good teams that when they go to another team that have a little bit more freedom or responsibility or whatever, those things get cleaned up and he continues to pop. The Sixers don't have, this is in a world where Harden walks, they just don't have a lot of options. They're just not, there's not that many great options. And so one potential one is going after a guy that was just recently signed on a team that like had bad vibes the entire season because Draymond punched him in the face. And you go like, is this guy still the, could he go back to being on the trajectory of a player that he was when the Warriors, who ostensibly a very good, smart organization, signed him to that big contract? And I don't know the answer to that. I don't necessarily see him as like, oh, he's exactly the kind of player that the Sixers had in game 6 and 7 where they melted down. I see him more of a Maxi type where he's playing fast and making occasional mistakes and playing occasionally loose with the ball and stuff. He's a good shooter. He makes tough shots. He takes tough shots. Some of those shots are bad shots. If you look at Jamal Murray's percentages, they're very similar at that stage of his career. But yeah, he absolutely took a step back this year. So if you're looking at this year specifically, like it was not good, but that's the reason why you could get him, potentially. So, I don't know. I don't know if I loved it. I don't know if I love it. I go back and forth whether or not it seems good or if it's like we're trapping ourselves into another thing. I definitely see that there's definite downside to it. But if Harden walks, then you're going to have to take some kind of swing like that.
And the final voicemail, 833 Lickface.
Spike, Mike, CJ, this is Scott from Chestnut Hill. Maybe it's because I'm not in my 20s or even in my 30s anymore. I'm trying to meet the Sixers where they're at. I'm trying to stop being upset and fretting over what they're not and what they lack, and instead trying to appreciate what they've got. And what they've got, if Harden doesn't walk in Harden, is the most beautiful pocket passing and pick and roll passing I have ever seen in a Sixers uniform, full stop. Joel Embiid during the regular season, take your pick of a long list of things that he does spectacularly well. Maybe that's what this is, our beloved process. Maybe the sun sets on it with these two riding off into the distance, and we just need to appreciate it for what it is and not losing our minds over what it isn't. Maybe it's us that needs to change, or we blow it all up.
What do you think, Mike?
No, I mean, look, if you are well-adjusted enough to do that, I think everyone that goes like fans just want a team that is good enough and they play hard and they get in the playoffs and maybe they win a game. And isn't that so nice? Like, why do you want to win a championship? And I guess it'd be nice if they won more games, but really the team fans just want a team to be like just good and tries hard and wins 43 games. And isn't that sweet? Like, no, fuck no. I don't understand anyone that's like that. I get why, like, if you've been the Kings or the Pistons or something and been really, really bad for a long time, why you just like, let me just make the playoffs and I can just see a team that I give a shit about for 1 year. But after this many years of this, like, you obviously are going to want your team to take the next step because you can't, the joy of like getting in the playoffs as a 3 or the 4 seed, like, doesn't do anything anymore. And it won't do anything for anybody in Philadelphia or like as a Clippers fan or other organizations that haven't broken through until they get past the second goddamn round. It's ridiculous. And it's frustrating on another level because, yeah, we say they haven't gotten past second round. As we've said before, they haven't beaten anyone good in the playoffs.
They have never beaten
a good team in the playoffs. The best team that they beat is probably the Raptors last year, which is disgusting.
Funny. Yeah.
It's not, they've beaten no one. They've beaten like Brooklyn twice, bad or mediocre Brooklyn teams. They beat the Wizards with Bradley Beal, and they beat the Raptors. And it's just like, who was impressed by any of it? They beat Miami when Justice Winslow was stepping on Embiid's face mask. Like, they're just not, like, it's not good. And meanwhile, Boston has made the conference finals like 18 years in a row. And they're saying like, hey, Jaylen Brown might leave now because it's not good enough. And it's like that, then we can, once we get to the conference finals, then we can start going like, okay, maybe we should enjoy this. But they haven't even allowed us to get to a place where they can enjoy it yet. It's disgusting. I do like that Joe Lacob is probably going to hire his son to run the Warriors. I think that's nice. That makes me feel good in a Colangelo-y kind of way. Other teams falling apart and being run poorly like a family business. With that is at least some joy that I can find. But yeah, Nick Nurse, sure. I'll ride with Nick Nurse. I will hate the amount of minutes he plays, guys, as I did over the course of the year with Doc, who was not as egregious as Nurse at all. Because it's the regular season. You don't need it. You're gonna need these guys in the playoffs, and to shorten your rotation so early is disgusting. But whatever. I can't wait to be upset about it. And we should get Nick Nurse on the podcast, and we should develop a relationship with him. And just like I bullied Tobias into dunking more, I will bully Nick Nurse NN into playing Jaden Springer 7 minutes a game. That's it.
I want one of the red Nick Nurse hats. The black ones are not my style. I like the red one. Oh, but by the way, actually, there's no reaction necessary to this. I just thought you would enjoy it.
Hey, Spike, Mike, CJ. Just want to let you know I'm in Vegas right now on a bachelor party. Bunch of LA guys. They hate Doc as much as I do. We're watching Celtics Heat Game 6 along with the Knights. And I just placed the largest bet of my life, which is Big Al Horford under points, rebounds, and assists. These guys have been giving me shit all week about it. And it was a low number, but I'm committed to it and just sweating it out. So fingers crossed. Let's go Robert Williams. Let's go Grant. Bye. Hey, guys. Just calling back on the Al Horford Vegas set.
Did you hit the Al bet, though?
Yeah.
All right. That's automatic.
People are giving me high fives, but I just feel sick to my stomach. That terrorist was fucking unplayable down the stretch. Somehow he gets rewarded with Game 7. I just think that's so utterly ridiculous. And I just don't want this money. So if I could donate it to like Providence Animal Shelter or something, just please let me know, and I'd be happy to do so. 8-7, go Jimmy.
Really good.
Called us twice. Called our voicemail twice from Amazing. A bachelor party.
Amazing.
So good. Amazing.
Do you feel good about the Sixers right now? Do you feel better than you felt a week ago?
I feel the fact that they hired Nick Nurse was actually like pretty surprising to me. And
you thought it'd be good, Tony?
I really did. I was really resigned. I was really in a bad place. It hasn't gotten me out of my bad Harden place yet, because I still think that fucking 4-year, $168 million contract is coming or whatever. But it did give me a little bit of faith. And you know what? Honestly, it's something new in a way that we can talk about. I think, like, no offense to, and Michael Connor made this when he was talking about Frank Vogel and Monty Williams in his article. It's like, that would have been boring as shit, man. Like, the Nick Nurse thing seems like it's going to be interesting and he's going to try shit and it will be like, at least like interesting or something. Yeah. And I'll take that too.
I'm sure we'll talk about this 47 more times in the offseason. It'll be it's a long offseason as they all are, but
yeah,
I love try shit. Regular season is for try shit. And that's why it's frustrating to me. And I'm pre-frustrated by the idea that he's not going to play guys more because that's part of trying shit. Let's try shit.
But he might.
Nick, you and I, we love trying shit. Let's try shit. I ran a 1-2-1 zone, Nick. Let's see if we can do it. So let's play Jaden Springer. Let's play Lewis King. Show me something. Get me back in. That's the only way I'm back in.
I don't want to. Okay. If we get him on, you have to, there's no way he'll dive into the pod deep enough to know the answer to this. If he's at a live break or something, you're going to have to present to him the situation that you faced and ask him what he would do.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Sit down with him.
We will talk to you this weekend. By that point, I will be totally emptied out.
Best calling on Sixers Twitter.
Are you down with TTT?
Yeah, you know, like this.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you.
If you don't fuck with me,
then I won't fuck with you.
But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking get you!
Time for plan B.